You're listening to Nick Luck Daily. This edition is brought to you by Timeform, the trusted source of racing data and analysis. By the Racehorse Owners Association. And by the Racing App, in partnership with FitzDares.
Good morning, welcome to the show. Thursday the 18th of April, slightly brighter start to the day here in Newmarket, where I still am for the Craven meeting, the third and final day today. It is Craven Stakes Day. In a moment, we'll be reflecting on some of the significant performances yesterday. Pretty Crystal was the winner of the Nell Gwyn. Small filly, but very tough, and she beat the much better fancied Dance Sequence. Though did Dance Sequence still enhance her claims for the 1,000 guineas, even in defeat? We'll be discussing that, and we'll be talking about two horses who galloped yesterday, whose classic claims are perhaps even more obvious. They're both trained by Carl Burke, and he joins me for a really informative interview in a few minutes' time. Also reflecting on the action from the sales last night, which threw up some tremendous human stories, none more so than Con and Amy Marnan. That was a result that was hugely popular amongst the Breeze Up fraternity, given the loss of Teresa Marnan in December. Anthony Stroud bidding primarily for Godolphin, buying the top six lots. The final progeny of Galileo making a million guineas. I say the final progeny available at public auction unraced. That was a huge return. We'll be speaking to the guys who made a million from 125,000 later on. So all that's to come. But first of all, one of the great stalwarts of the jumping jockeys room has bowed out. Paddy Brennan, as he indicated he might at some point soon on this podcast last week, did call it a day yesterday on the aptly named Man of the People at Cheltenham, at his beloved Cheltenham. It was a pretty wild Brennan-esque celebration, up in the irons, arms aloft, helmet came off as well, the full 9 yards, and it was extremely well received. So I put a call into him this morning to ask him how he was feeling after all the celebrations.
Yeah, a little bit rough. I had a couple of drinks last night with my family and friends, and yeah, a little bit worse for wear. But yeah, it's a weird enough feeling, but happy with my decision.
And we spoke a little bit about it when we talked on the podcast last week, and you were loath to be forced out. But I guess when you ride a winner at Cheltenham, that was always going to be a good stage for it. How long did you have it in the back of your mind for, in terms of venue and timing?
Probably 2 years.
As long as that?
Yeah, it's been on my mind. Sometimes when you're in a position as a jockey and you're amongst all your friends in the weigh room, it's just hard to leave. It's hard to accept that, you know, your time is up. And it's literally 2 days ago, maybe 3 days ago, it just entered my head that, right, this is it. The time is right for me to go. And when you get your head around that, it's almost relief.
And I'm quite surprised, in a sense, that you said 2 years, only because a lot of jockeys will say, well, when you think about retiring, you probably should just get on and do it and do something else. But you've been performing very effectively in that period. Was that a straightforward thing to do or not?
Yeah, no. I've never been made feel old in the weigh room, but you know, I was definitely one of the senior jockeys, and it did become harder. Nick, I honestly feel like I didn't have one fall left. I wasn't scared to fall, but I just felt like one more fall was going to be difficult for me to manage.
So what has it been chiefly, do you think, that has sustained you for this long? Because it's 26, 27 years since you had your first ride. I mean, that is a serious innings by the standards of any sports person.
Yeah, I suppose survival, management of your rides, accepting that, you know, you can't ride for everyone. And, you know, eventually I just rode for Fergal Horse. I was always sort of riding out of school, and I was trying to minimise the risk as much as possible. And I suppose that did help, you know. You're narrowing it down, but it did get to the stage, Nick, where I was looking at races thinking, I don't want to ride that. And then eventually it was almost like I didn't want to ride anything. Not from a point of view of I was worried about a fall, but just, yeah, it was getting harder and harder.
So a new chapter begins now. When we spoke about this a few months ago, you hadn't really formulated in your own mind exactly what you wanted to do next. Is it a bit clearer to you now? Have you talked it through with family and figured out where you might go?
Yeah, definitely. Like today is the start of a new day, Nick. My phone's been ringing all morning. I'm happy to answer to everyone. As a jockey, you're selfish. You don't have time to speak to everyone. You try not to be rude, but the book is open now. I've got a few things in the pipeline. I'm in a very fortunate position. Got a lot of horses here on the farm. So pleased my wife could be there yesterday. She's a nurse. She's gone to work today. So yeah, we carry on. Nothing really changes except I don't ride horses around the field anymore. That was like fun. That was my dream, and I lived it.
And interestingly, I was speaking to Aidan Coleman a couple of weeks ago because he's just retired. Now, he was forced to retire through injury, and he's a little younger than you as well. But that feeling of the fact that this really has been fun and foremost, and you put everything into it, but you get a massive amount out of it. You know, you used to hear jockeys retiring and talk about the kind of mental and physical torture they'd been through in the process. But it's sort of quite refreshing, really, to hear both of you, you know, stress first of all the enjoyment that you've got out of the sport.
Yeah, honestly, Nick, I've loved it. Yeah, it's been so much fun. And I meet sometimes jockeys that didn't get to fulfill their career. Aidan, Jason McGuire, Chuck Thornton, some great jockeys, and they never got to get to the age of 43 and basically swim across the sea and get to the other side and walk onto the beach like I did. I've fulfilled every dream. I haven't been easy to deal with, but I'm man of the people yesterday. I had a cameraman waiting at the top because I told him if I do win, you know, it was planned. And from the third last fence where we had that fall on cue card to the line, felt like a day. And that moment when I hit the line was just complete relief. It's over.
And that is a wonderful feeling, I guess, in a sense, because there'll be no regrets. There's no, oh, I wish I was still in the weighing room. You've absolutely squeezed the last drop of juice out of the lemon.
I think I've squeezed the last drop out of everyone. Fergal O'Brien, everyone, my wife, my friends. Yeah, I've got every single ounce out of it. And that relief feeling, it's special. You know, that was a moment I probably witnessed when I won the Gold Cup, what I experienced yesterday. And yeah, there's absolutely no regrets. I hadn't bloody crossed the line. I was asked to ride in the Legends race. I said, that won't be happening.
Absolutely none of that kind of nonsense, no?
No. If we can get a race for Graham Lee, I'll be the first man there. But unless they do that, I'll be leaving the boots hanging on the peg.
Yeah, I fear you could be getting in the saddle sooner rather than later if that's the case, because you can bet your bottom dollar there will be a race for Graham coming soon.
Maybe I can make that happen. So that's what I'd like that. I'd like that a lot.
Well, perhaps now we've put it out there, perhaps we can make it happen.
Well, yeah, I'm going cycling with Roddy Green and Tom Scudamore and people like that. I think in the 5th or 4th of May. I haven't even got a bike. Well, I have a bike, but I haven't got the bike I need. So yeah, I've got to get on with stuff like that now.
Well, I sort of very much appreciate the fact that you did it your way, and I suppose that's all.
Yeah,
anyway. Yeah, you know.
Yeah, definitely, and I appreciate your. You know, you've been so good to me over my career, and a lot of people in the press that I'll always have happy and fond memories of, and that stood by me. So thank you so much.
Well, Paddy Brennan, Jane Mangan is with me this morning. He was never going to go quietly, was he? Let's face it.
No, but he can do it whatever way he wants. Part of me was really disappointed for him last week in Tralee when Mayor and the Bumper didn't quite get the job done. And I could see it in Fergal O'Brien's face that he had mixed emotions having beat him with the stablemate. But I'm glad he got to do it at a track that's been quite good to him, Cheltenham. I think he had 6 Cheltenham Festival winners there in his career. And as you say, he's a larger-than-life kind of character. He's ridden over 1,500 winners. He's been associated with some great horses. He rode for Tom George for many years, Colin Tizard during his, shall we say, his fantastic seasons with Cue Card. And I'm glad that he got to do it on his own terms.
Yeah, and of course, we spoke to Paddy before Aintree when he'd picked up that ban, and I was sort of saying, well, are you going to go out if you ride a winner? No, I don't really want to end on that note, but you know, how many more times is he going to get to go back to Cheltenham? Well, realistically, none. And you ride a winner over fences there for the guy that you've become so inextricably linked with. And it seemed an obvious thing to do. I think to make the point about Fergal O'Brien as a wise one, I think it's really nice sometimes when you see a jockey in the autumn of their career, you know, really lean into an association that kind of gives them another kick, another lift.
Yeah, like after, I suppose, things didn't really work out with previous trainers, Fergal was kind of in the ascent at that stage. The quality of his yard and the numbers were starting to increase. And you just thought, when Paddy said at the beginning of this season, I won't really be riding for anyone other than Fergal, that kind of tells you where his mind was at, but also where his loyalty was. They had a great understanding between the pair of them. Paddy had an unusual style, a style that wouldn't be palatable for everyone, but I think Fergal had ultimate trust in him. And it's nice to see it. Look, Paddy's had some great horses, God's Own, Q Card, but of course Imperial Commander's the one, you know, Ryanair Chase, a Cheltenham Gold Cup. They're the races you want to win. And I think he mentioned, was it to you or somebody else, that he's probably most satisfying result was snaring Ruby Walsh and Vautour on the line in the King George as well. So some great memories, and on to the next chapter.
That's Paddy Brennan, who has retired, and I'm sure will make a success of whatever he turns his hands to next. Willie Mullins, as was pointed out by Kevin Blake, I think it was, a couple of days ago, is closing in on the all-time record of wins for an Irish trainer, which I hadn't realised, but should have been obvious to me, probably. But you were there helping him work out where his next winners were going to come from yesterday, Jane.
Yeah, I don't think he needs my help. There was myself and a bunch of the Irish media went to Clissutton yesterday to get a lowdown on what he might be doing in terms of Punchestown. But of course, now with the British Trainers Championship on his horizon, he's £40,000 ahead of Dan Skelton. You mentioned what Kevin Blake said on Twitter. So Dermot Weld has trained 4,374 global winners. 4,374. Willie Mullins is currently on 4,358. God knows, he could probably do it the week of Punchestown. Anyway, we move on to his team. Probably the only real surprise for me was that El Fabiolo is on course for the celebration chase at Sandown. A very valuable race, and a race that he wasn't going to let go without representation. He felt that if he were able to win that, it would be like winning two races, essentially, because You can ensure that neither of the other pair win it as well. So that was El Fabiolo. He flicked down through some of his team. Factifile and Majbra are currently out in Martinstown eating grass. They are finished for the season. Interestingly, Absurd, of course, the Ebor winner horse, went to the Melbourne Cup, won the county hurdle under a wonderful ride at Cheltenham. He was considering dropping him back in trip on the flat. The guys who own him want to go back to Melbourne, but he was thinking he might even consider a change of tactics and going for the Caulfield Cup with Absurd. Asian Master, the horse that ran so well in the Supreme,
I think that makes sense. That makes sense, doesn't it, Jane? I mean, go for the Caulfield Cup, run him there, and then run him in the Cup. I don't. You have nothing to lose. I think you get two shots across the bow, don't you? That's the thing. You get two goes if you're international in Australia. You can't run more than twice.
You just get the vibe that he's figuring the horse out all of the time. And maybe he feels like there's more to come. He just in Willie's own way. He was thinking in his head as he was speaking, and he was thinking that maybe, even though Frankie Dettori was brilliant on him in the Ebor, maybe they're still not after finding the key to him. Asian Master, hurdles, potentially chasing next year. We all wanted to know what Ballyburn was going to be doing next year, but sure, we all know we weren't going to get the answer to that question yesterday, but he did.
What's your instinct with that? Because your instincts are normally right.
I don't know if they are, but I'd say chasing. I'd say 90, my head would be 90% chasing, just because they have Estate Man isn't an old horse, Lossie Mouth is there, they have obviously different owners, so they can decide that themselves. But he said he would compare that performance at Cheltenham to Vautour and Faugheen, and they had Vautour and Faugheen in the same year, and Vautour went chasing and Faugheen stayed hurdly, and the rest is history. Dino Blue, question. Did Dino Blue get beaten because of the trip at Cheltenham, Willie? And he was not putting it down to that at all. He was frustrated that she got beaten, and he thinks that wasn't maybe a true reflection of her ability. He obviously feels there's unfinished business with Dino Blue.
Was he elegantly, was he, do you think he was elegantly nudging the jockey under the bus without being so impolite as to say so?
I think he felt that if the race was run again, he might win.
Yes. Okay. So the answer to that is yes. Okay. Next.
As you wish. Gaelic Warrior, he looked great, carrying a lot of condition after his Arkle win. The form has obviously taken a huge boost since he led to Tomp and found a 51. He's going to Punchestown. Gaelic or Gallop and Deschamps look great. I actually stood into him yesterday. I couldn't believe it. He's 17-1. In the parade ring at the races, you don't think he's as tall as that. He's in great form. He feels it will be difficult to go back to Punchestown, where he got beaten last year, to take on Faster Slow, who might just be a little bit of a fresher horse considering his departure earlier on in the Gold Cup. Il Était Temps is likely to go again after his Aintree exploits. Ompéré Pass likely to take on State Man at Punchestown. Jade de Grouge, he looked great. Yasmin DeVoe has put on weight since the Cheltenham bumper victory. Cargese could go again. Lossiemouth, the original plan was to go to Auteuil, unlikely to go there now, just to Punchestown, and potentially a champion hurdle route for her next year. Mystical Power likely to go again, look great pulling the arms out of his rider around the gallop despite his Aintree exploits. And State Man, as relaxed and as cool as you like, he is just the unassuming winning machine.
There you go. Well, if you are a member of the Willie Mullins fan club, you will have thoroughly enjoyed that. And there is life in the old season yet, that's for sure. Right, I was here in
Sorry,
Newmarket.
Nick,
Go on. Oh, is there more?
before we move on, it is worth noting he was asked if obviously the British Trainers Championship is very important to him. Would Paul Townend be going across every day considering Paul's own championship battle here? He said Paul is completely his own boss. He can do as he wishes. So Danny Mullins actually goes to Cheltenham today to ride his one runner Carrier de Blaze in the first race at Cheltenham. Danny Mullins goes across to ride that. Paul stays at home to ride three today in Ireland in Clonmel. Of course, Paul is four winners behind Jack Kennedy in the jump trainers or jump jockeys championship here. Jack is on 117 winners. He has three rides today, five rides at Limerick tomorrow. Paul is on 113 winners, three rides today, no ride tomorrow. But the pair of them are 55 winners clear of Keith Donoghue, the next best on 58 winners. And it's worth noting that while Paul Townend is getting all of the adulation, all of the credit, and rightly so, because he's riding at a completely different level to what he has been maybe in latter years, he's won a champion hurdle, he's won a Gold Cup, he's won an Aintree Grand National. But for every State Man, Jack Kennedy's had an Irish Point. For every Galloping Deschamps, Jack Kennedy's had a Jerry Colomb, and for every I Am Maximus, Jack and Gordon have a Delta Work. So you just have to feel that if Jack Kennedy gets caught in this Jump Jockeys Championship, it's going to be the season of seconds.
All right, onwards. And switching back codes to Newmarket. Yes, there were interesting clues yesterday, lots of impressive performances on the track, but perhaps most significant as regards the classics were the gallopers before racing, two of whom came from Carl Burke's stable. He's very exciting, only raced on the synthetic so far. Knight Raider, who is third or fourth in for the 2,000 guineas behind City of Troy and Rosalion, and his star filly Fallen Angel, Moygles stud winner last year, who is amongst the favourites, if not the favourite in some lists, for the filly's equivalent. That's where I began when I caught up with Carl Burke last night, and I asked him in this piece of work on the Rowley Mile how she'd coped with the undulations of Newmarket.
No problem at all with the track. It was a great chance to give her an introduction to it. As we know, some horses don't come down the hill from the bushes, but she handled it very well. She's a very high class filly, and Danny was delighted with her.
And obviously last year, you know, she looked as though she should develop as a 3-year-old. How has she developed?
No, very much so. She was always had the height, but she's really filled her frame. I don't know if you saw her in the paddock, but she's a strong, mature filly now, and we're very happy with her.
And they weren't particularly straightforward conditions. The ground was nice on the Rowley Mile, but the wind was high. It wasn't always easy for horses to get balanced and get organised. She was pretty professional.
She was, yeah. The wind was more behind them, so I don't think it affected them too much. But it was, everything went as well as we wanted it to. and she had a nice blow. She was there really for fitness, whereas Knight Raider was there for experience. And she'll still take another gallop. She'll have another good gallop at week on Friday, all being well at home, and that should set her up for the following week.
But you don't need to take her away again. You've done that.
Oh, no, I won't. Definitely won't take her away again.
But, what was the thinking behind not running her in a trial?
She's experienced enough. She's you know, she's streetwise. You know, she showed that in the Moy Glare. And interesting today, first thing Danny said to me when he come off the track today, she was dying for a smack around the backside, because that's the type of filly she is. She only does enough, you know. She went past the lead horse, who's a useful workhorse and a decent 90 rated sprinter himself. And she went past him with ease, picked him up with ease. But Danny said she wasn't doing it. She was only dossing in front. She had a nice, healthy blow. There's another gear there when you really go for it.
And she will respond when you ask.
100%. You only have to go back and watch the Moy Glare to see that. She almost looked beat there, furlong out, and then running away from them at the end. And she's a very game, professional filly.
I spoke to Kelly about her on the podcast the other day, and she said, you know, everything she does at home is pretty straightforward. She's a real pro, as though she's been doing it forever.
Exactly, yeah. She's not that flashy at home, but she's just starting to come to herself now. The last week, 10 days, James Cowley, who rides her regularly at home, he's come in with a smile on his face for the last couple of work mornings, and she's just getting a head on. You know, she's got a match head on now, and we're very happy with her.
Obviously, Opera Singer won't be running, so that makes your task a little easier. I'm sure Aidan will have horses running in the race, but you saw the Nell Gwynn today, in which Dance Sequence, one of your market rivals, was defeated. What did you make of the race as a whole?
Of that race, I obviously watched it, but I'd have to watch a replay really to give a good opinion of it. Whether that's Guinea's form, I would have my doubts. You know, we sort of raced against the winner a couple of times with the different fillies last year, and look, I'd be more than happy with that result.
Why did you not take Darnation today?
Well, Darnation was originally, it was never the plan to bring Darnation. I didn't think she had a lot of races last year, and she's very streetwise. It was only last week the owners, we were umming and ahhing. She's very ground dependent, and then we, you know, she's a filly that doesn't show a lot at home anyway. You know, she shows it on the track. So the owners sort of suggested, well, why don't we bring her away? We're just, you know, we were toying with running her in France next week, and said, no, let's bring her away for a race course gallop and then go for the Guineas if the ground is right. She is definitely ground dependent. And a couple of days ago, I just had second thoughts. I thought we'll wait and, you know, we might gallop her nearer home. I didn't really think, with the ground drying up was another factor at the time. The ground looked like going good to firm, and I didn't want to gallop her on that ground anyway. So I just sort of went off the fact. She's fine. She's in great health, but whether she runs in an English Guineas will very much depend on the ground.
It is. So if we suddenly got a deluge, not impossible they could both run.
No, not impossible at all. I mean, but she is ground dependent in that class, you know.
Okay. Knight Raider, obviously, this was quite a key day, because we've seen him be pretty brilliant, albeit against inferiors on the all-weather, but good horse last time, mind. What did he do on the grass?
We were very happy. That is probably his first, well, it is his first proper gallop on grass. I mean, he probably went early doors last year with our two-year-olds did a bit of easy work on grass. He may not have even done that, I can't remember without looking at the records. Then he picked up a little injury, so when we brought him back, all his work's been done on polytrack at home. Obviously, he's raced twice on polytrack. The ideal scenario would have been to go for a trial, but I just felt the trials were so close to D-Day, and Steve was very keen to keep the dream alive. So it was important we came here and A, saw how he worked, B, gave him an experience on the track, and I'm delighted we have, but he'll have come on a bundle for that. He needed the experience, and even just travelling and went to see them in the stables. They came down last night, went to see him in the stables, and he was watching all the other horses and whinnying, and he's a bit of a baby, so he'll have learnt a lot on the track and the gallop. I'm very happy with him. He picked up a good lead horse in Flight Plan, his 113 Group 2 winner, who we think has improved. The key to it was how Flight Plan galloped. Sam James rode him, and he rides him regularly at home, and they work regularly at home together. I'd have to say Knight Raider would pick Flight Plan up on polytrack very easily. he picked him up nicely today. Danny thought he'd probably hit the front too soon and he wouldn't want to be in that position on a race day. But the key to it was how flight plan, and Sam was very happy with him. He could go to for the mile next week at Sandown. So that'll be it'll be interesting to see how he runs there, if he goes there.
And was there anything in today from Knight Rider that made you think one way or the other about his ability to really see out a stiff straight mile?
I think he'll stay. He's a horse with a very high cruising speed. He quickens. I don't think, although he's a dark angel, I don't think he'd mind the bit better ground, as in probably a little bit loose there today, a little bit dead. He's a high class horse. He's a Group 1 horse. Whether he's quite ready for a Group 1 Guineas at this stage of his life, time will tell.
Do you think he's the best horse in your stable?
Best colt.
Nicely ducked.
Best colt. Fallen Angel is very good. She's a very good filly. He's definitely the best colt, I think.
Carl, good luck. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Nick.
Better than all right. So that was Carl Burke. Really interesting stuff about both those horses. Particularly, I thought about Knight Rider. He's very hot on Fallen Angel, the Moyglare winner from last year, Jane. And yesterday he watched on as the little diminutive, very tough and talented Pretty Crystal stuck her neck out to beat the much vaunted Dance Sequence, who was also amongst the favourites for the Guineas in yesterday's Nell Gwyn. What did you make of all of that as regards the 1,000 Guineas picture?
Well, just to refresh anybody, because I know my own brain is sometimes torn between National Hunt and Flat at this time of the year, Fallen Angel is the favourite for the Guineas, ahead of Ylang Ylang. My heart tells me Ylang Ylang will probably be better out and trip. Dance Sequence is actually still third favourite ahead of Ramatuelle, who, whether she'll get the mile remains to be seen. So they're the top couple in the betting for the race. Fallen Angel, of course, last year's Moigler winner. And now with Opera Singer out, quite rightly, should have been favoured all the way along in my book. She beat Vespertilio quite well at the Curragh, and she looks like a filly going to improve for this year. But I have to admire Pretty Crystal. She's a small filly. Dance Sequence dwarfed her as they headed into the dip, but she really stuck her neck out when she got headed. Kathmandu, it's worth noting, the third filly, a sister to Katie Walsh's Sail Topper, and day one of the Craven Breeze Up Sale. So just a nice little nod to Allegra there, the Ogden family breeding quite well. But Pretty Crystal, 18-1, relatively unfancy, but placing Royal Ascot last year was in the Albany, second in the Princess Margaret. She had very good juvenile form, and I was pleased for Richard Fahey. He spoke after the race that he was a little bit frustrated that she hadn't gained a Pattern Company win as a juvenile. She looks like she could be very exciting for this year, albeit she is quite diminutive in stature.
And I thought there were some other notable performances yesterday on the Rowley Mile. I don't know how closely you were able to pay attention, Jane, given your exploits at Willie Mullins's, but certainly Brian Meehan's JRB, the winner of the Fielden Stakes, I thought was a horse that was worth going forward with. Brian was a bit conflicted afterwards, at once saying, I may maybe Hampton Court Royal Ascot. And I think by the end of the day, he'd resolved to get this horse into the Prix de Jockey Club. But I don't think he'd look out of place there either.
No, and he obviously felt he was quite good last year because he went straight from a maiden to the Jean-Luc Lagardère from August to October. So look, I know Richard Hughes was on the pod during the week and he spoke favourably of Whipcracker, who ran with a lot of credit, but this guy pulled away from him very well. And he's out of a Dalicani, out of a Galileo. There's a lot of stamina on the dam side. I love the way he hit the line. And I think there's a lot more to come from him. And I'm going to get your opinion on a handicap that I was really impressed with, Kalpana. How good could she be? She's obviously got a great pedigree. And I thought that was very taking performance.
I thought there were a number of significant points about that. Now, I'm not sure that 10 furlong handicap that concluded the card at Newmarket yesterday was quite as strong as it sometimes is in terms of real depth. You know, there were years where you'd get every single Tom, Dick and Harry in Newmarket wheeling out their best handicap 3-year-old. And okay, it was still a good race. But anyway, she did absolutely bolt up. She certainly ran to a mark, I think, in the low three figures. And she's a black type winner waiting to happen. She's a great advertisement for Kirsten Rousing's Stallion Study of Man, who she's always had enormous faith in. and the Arcos family, son of Deep Impact, who was a French Classic winner, so he ought to be able to sire some nice horses. But yeah, I like you, was deeply impressed with her attitude and the way she really stretched away under Ryan Moore, who's never going to ask a horse more than he absolutely has to, and she put daylight between herself and her rival. Papal Bull ran in the race. Not Now Cato ran in the race. Main Sequence ran in the race. So wherever you are in the world, that'll mean something to you. All right, back to the sales then. And the meaningfully final Galileo to go through public auction unraced, who realised a million guineas. And you think, well, son of Galileo, a million guineas, not that surprising. It's hardly as though there are any of them left to buy in this space. But he only cost 125,000, and that was only in December, which is pretty remarkable. And it's the same consigners again, Roger Kavanagh, Cormac O'Flynn and the Glending team, who've done it as they did with Van Dijk last year. And this is what it meant to them.
Static. You know, we had some other nice horses today that it didn't quite fire for. So, you know, to get him to do that was just sensational.
You know, you go out and you buy all these nice horses as yearlings. At what point, Cormac, was it obvious to you guys that this was going to be your star?
We loved him the second we saw him, really. He looked like a fast horse, and we just decided to take a chance. It was great to be able to access a horse like that from Coolmore, incredibly well bred and presented, and he had a great attitude, and Roderick and the team took him from there, and fantastic to get the result like that.
And obviously by the preeminent sire of our generation, but clearly as stallions come to the end of their careers and the final crops come through and they trickle through, sort of people go off them a little bit as commercial propositions. Did that only serve to encourage you more to get stuck in and think, well, no, we will have a go?
Well, it was such a unique selling point. You know, he is the last chance to buy a Galileo, so you know, to anybody around the world, that's such a unique opportunity. You know, he was always going to be sought after, people were going to come see him, and once they get to the door, we knew they weren't going to be disappointed. And then when we started doing his canters, you know, we knew he was going to catch people's eye galloping. And then when we actually started to really let him down, we were like, Christ, he's quick too. But you know, he's getting that on the dam side, being out of Claude de Mer, you know, closely related to Gregorian. Yeah, no, it's special.
So it's actually that thing that Coolmore have worked hard to achieve over the last particularly 10 to 15 years with the Galileos, is mapping him onto speedy mares and getting your kind of classic miler.
Absolutely, yeah. They've done it time and time again, and they're one of the best, if not the best, in the business for that reason. So, it was just tremendous to be able to access him, and hopefully he goes on and repeats what that cross has done so many times before.
So obviously he's gone to Godolphin and gone to Charlie Appy. Do you think that's what he is? If you were to have a bet now, would you say he's a miler?
Yeah, I would. I think he'll start out over shorter than that. You know, he showed enough gears the other day and he was only half at the races because, you know, he's a May foal. We didn't go to the well. He's a fresh horse ready to move forward. We're excited.
Obviously, you've done this before, most notably with Van Dijk last year. And, of course, I think that woke everybody up, really. People who aren't even interested in sales to the power of a breezer, particularly when they've got a field of 200 horses and they beat them all by seconds.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a unique way to purchase a horse. You can buy them and have them in your silks within 4 or 5 weeks. So to be able to see them gallop as well is, it's a real opportunity to buy something that's maybe a little bit different, or not buy a fancy sire or something that's a little left field. So it's great for the buying bench to be able to come here and have a different perspective versus a yearling sale.
Right, gents, are you off to Stansted now, or are you getting the magic carpet home?
Stansted and then up the north.
Enjoy it, celebrate, and we'll see you back here next year.
Cheers, Nick.
Thanks very much, Nick. Cheers.
Thank you, Nick.
Wow, what a touch there. Roger Kavanagh and Cormac O'Flynn turning 125 grand into a million. It's the speed, Jane Mangan, with which they did it that was frightening. They only bought the horse in December.
Same as Van Dijk. I tip my hat to them. They are incredibly savvy, clever. That horse was there for everybody to see. He was hidden in plain sight in a sense, because there was always going to be attention on a Galileo yearling being sold. And he was bred by Coolmore, and they have worked magic. He breezed beautifully, but you know, you have to have the whole package. And he obviously caught the attention of a lot of people. KHK got involved, Amo Racing, Kia pushed Anthony Stroud all the way to the line, as they say. and he was the standout. But an incredible result for Rodri Kavanagh and his Glending Kildare Farm and for Cormac O'Flynn as well. 2 years in a row. But no doubt that the exploits of Van Dijk and the confidence people have now in the breeze-ups, you know, having that possibility of unearthing a champion two-year-old, that definitely helped proceedings at the top end over the last 2 days.
Yeah, I mean, Jimmy George, marketing director for Tassels, conceded that they needed to improve the clearance rate next year. And there, you know, was a concern in that regard. I think what did strike me was there were a number of very good stories to the sale. We spoke to Katie Walsh yesterday. Well, she doubled up. She got up 525 for another one. So I think it was a total spend of 265 for a return of over $1 million for Katie. That's pretty good going.
Oh, incredible. And I'm so thrilled for her. Look, everybody works hard. I know that. But to go over there with two horses and come back with over $1 million guineas for the pair of them is quite incredible. I must mention before we move on that Galileo out of Manderley, that became Galileo's 69th seven-figure public auction horse. Just think about that for a second. 69 horses have gone through public auction by Galileo to sell for over $1 million. That's incredible. Anyway, we move on. I thought, look, I was at home looking at the sale. The top end looked very healthy. It obviously helped an awful lot. Anthony Stroud signed for the top six slots, two of them under the Stroud Coleman banner, four of them under the Godolphin banner, and that hugely propped up the sale. But it just on day one looked a little bit tougher in the middle market. Yesterday was somewhat better. I know that the median was on par with last year. The average was slightly up overall. The gross was up. The gross was down a fraction, and the high price was up. But as you mentioned, the clearance rate is 72%. I'm sure that's what the focus of Tattersalls will be on. And let's hope that some of these horses will be seen on the racetrack to a high level very soon.
I feel like you're better off with Charlie.
You don't have to.
If there was one result at Tattersalls over these 2 days that really warmed the heart, it was lot 147, caught by Blue Point, because Charlie Post, who you probably know pretty well from his point-to-pointing exploits, and his wife Fran, they've been a great team at Station Yard over the years. They've gone into this game. They gave effectively 67,000 sterling for this colt just last autumn at the Tats Island sale. Just the 800,000 guineas tonight, bought by Anthony Stroud, off to Godolphin. Fran says she's speechless and doesn't really want to speak, so I'm going to come to you first, because Charlie's done all the interviews, but you just had a very special little moment there that I didn't want to intrude in, and it means an awful lot to you both, doesn't it?
Yeah, isn't it? I mean, to do it in our first year is pretty absolutely incredible, and to be honest, I mean, I don't think we ever thought that would happen.
And when Charlie and the guys got together, as he said to me, over a beer and decided it might be a fun thing to do, were you all in with this project?
Yes, and we had actually talked about it a few years ago, but then I suppose, I don't know whether it was with COVID or just we were tight, had a lot of cash tied up with pointers. And yeah, it was only really came together this year when we actually got organised probably about doing it.
It's a fantastic night for you. And I know an awful lot of work's gone in over the winter, but to what extent does this really make up for all those years of hard work that you both have put into building this business up?
Yeah, I mean, look, we try and market it as an academy. We want to produce talented horses, talented people. And right now, this is the best result we've had by a million miles. So, yeah, I mean, it's the best day of our career thus far. And it's going to take a bit of topping, Nick, anyway. So, yeah, it might be the best day, yeah.
And you went into this together. It's not always a walk in the park producing horses to sell, and far from it. When you're living with each other, you're working with each other, you're doing it day in, day out, it seems that, you know, this is quite a special staging post.
Yeah, I think, well, I suppose we always lose together and we win together, don't we? And then I suppose all the hard work and those days where sometimes you want to kill each other make it worthwhile, don't they?
There may be no death tonight, I fancy.
No death tonight.
My life is not in danger for one night, so for that I'm eternally grateful to Anthony Stroud.
Said nobody ever. Right, As far as this colt is concerned, obviously now you'd like to go and go on and see him do well. What was he showing to you right from the moment you got him?
He's like, he was a little bit sharp to break in, but then as soon as we got rolling, he just had an enormous appetite for work and just natural talent, you know, which again, I think whether it's a point-to-pointer or a flat horse, you see straight away. He just, everything came easy to him. Like I say, because we had nothing to fall back on, because this is the first time we'd done it, we were wary of being too bullish. But it was no surprise that he kind of pitched up and did the breeze. But and again, for him to be the fastest breeze of what is the most prestigious breeze up sale, is just, we're just massively proud of the horse. Yeah,
I'd say this won't be the last time you're doing it either.
No, hopefully might be able to go a bit stronger next time with more weather, with a larger team of horses. But
and what about the National Hunter horses? Are they still uppermost in your mind?
Yeah, I mean, as I said to Dan Skelton at Aintree the other day, I said, look, we know we're planning for next year. Royal Infantry, who was the first British horse home and the champion bumper, was one of ours. You know, he's going to win the Challo for Dan next year. And Country Mile, who...
All right, you're just showing off now.
He's going to win the Tolworth. So, you know, and if this lad goes and proves his worth on the flat now, yeah, it's just so exciting for everyone.
Yeah, he's going to win the Middle Park or the Dewhurst.
Yeah, exactly.
They've got the game by the you-know-what, Charlie and Fran Post. You deserve it. Congratulations.
Thanks, Nick. Thanks a lot.
Charlie Post after an extraordinary result yesterday. Jane, before we go, I wanted to mention Paddy Woods, the work rider of Arkell, who's died. To have such an integral place in folklore as someone so closely associated with the greatest steeplechaser anyone's ever seen, he'll be very fondly remembered.
Yeah, he was 93 from Ashbourne. Paddy rode Arkell to win his final race over hurdles, and he rode him in much of his work throughout that great horse's career. I think he was with the Drapers during the glory days of Flying Bolt and Fort Tria as well. He also worked for Dan Moore, and he won two Irish Grand Nationals himself. He was quite an established rider, but latterly, I suppose he became best known as the dad of Franny Woods, who we know. And of course, his son Eddie in America as well, a renowned horseman, breeze up man, all of the above. So yeah, he was known for his witty character. He was 100% till the very end, which is, you know, what we can only all hope for. And he had, I suppose, a full life, and he will certainly be remembered for that association with the greatest steeplechaser of all time.
Jane, do you have a tip for me for today?
I do indeed. I'm going to Cheltenham, despite the fact that you'll be in Newmarket. I was really impressed with Anna White when she won her bumper last time. And while this mare's bumper at 5 o'clock today is going to be super competitive, I think Anna Power is going to be very hard to beat for Jonathan Burke and Harry Fry, who doubled up yesterday. Hopefully they can close proceedings today on a winner as well.
All right, Jane, thank you very much. Thank you very much for listening. That was Thursday, the 18th. of April. We'll be back to do it all over again tomorrow. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you by Timeform, the trusted source of racing data and analysis, by the Racehorse Owners Association, and by the Racing App in partnership with Fitstairs.